This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Save a Pooch on Pet Life Radio. I am Beverly Isla, your host. Thank you so much for listening in today. Our special guest is Angie. She is the president and founder of the Mudstock Board of Directors. Now, Mudstock is best known for its festival, as you can imagine, but the work happens year-round, so through funding programs, through FLIP, one of their core programs, to focusing on keeping pets and their guardians safe and together. Now, this includes non-surgical birth control options like implants and injectables, alongside work on free roaming pet safety, food insecurity, and building ethical partnerships with underserved communities like the First Nations and Métis settlements. So when we get back from these messages, we'll be joined by Angie Robinson.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Save a Pooch. We are talking with Angie, president and founder of Mudstock. Thank you so much for being here today. So I came across Mudstock on Facebook, and the name itself was very enticing. Can you share a brief overview of Mudstock and how it grew from a festival into the program it is now? Or maybe it was the other way around?
It kind of did start with the festival. Way back when we first founded the festival, it was being basically run by a committee that was made up of volunteers from different animal rescues. Over the years, we have found that those animal rescues were just so overwhelmed with the work that they already had to do and their own fundraising and their own initiatives that we just couldn't get quite the interest that we needed to put on the full festival anymore. So we shifted gears a little bit, and hand in hand with focusing a little bit more on our FLIP program, we just changed gears a little bit so that now Mudstock is now funding our own programs.
Oh, wow. Well, that's the way to do it. Good job. Now, what led you to get involved with animal welfare work and eventually into your role as president?
Well, many, many, many years ago, I did have my own dog who did have some troubles of his own. He had a little bit of an incident that led us to a dog trainer, that led us to a doggy socialization group where I met the first of my animal rescuer friends. So in doing that, you know, I'm pretty outgoing. I'm pretty not at all shy. I'm one of those people that'll just kind of talk to anybody. So we just struck up a conversation, and she kind of just said to me, like, you seem kind of fun, and like, would you be interested in volunteering? I'm like, oh, you know, tell me more. And I started out just, you know, barbecuing at a few events here and there. And I guess the rest, as they say, is history. So I was with that rescue for several years. And in that time, Mudstock was born. And from that, FLIP came, working with First Nations outreach. So kind of where I found my soul and my purpose was out in First Nations outreach programs.
That is so specific. I've not heard of anybody venture in that. Yeah, that's awesome. Can you actually walk us through how the program works?
So what FLIP does is FLIP wants to focus on keeping pets and their guardians together. The main focus of traditional quote-unquote rescues for all of these years has just to intake. We don't want to do that. That's the first thing we say is, I don't want your dog. I want you to keep your dog. So what we do is we build a program that enables people to keep their pets? Is it tools? Is it resources? Is it education? What's the missing piece that is, you know, telling you that you should rehome your pet? Why are you considering surrendering your pet? Like, how can we help you not have to give up your pet? So when we look at different circumstances, like First Nations communities, inner city, pet safekeeping, people fleeing domestic violence, all of these things, you know, there's a solution. Sometimes it's just a way of finding it.
Right, right. Well, what is the acronym for FLIP?
FLIP started out as the Frontline Implant Partnership Program. But again, because we're right in a big transition of all sorts of things right now, we are changing it to the Frontline Impact Partnership Program that kind of encompasses a little bit more of where we want to go from here and in the future with expanding our programs, like I said, into the inner city, into pet safekeeping, into those educational seminars and sorts of things like that, where we're not focused just on First Nations communities and population control. While that's still very, very important.
Right.
We don't have a nation that we're working with right now, and we don't want to lose our momentum. So we've just kind of figured out, you know, how can we help in the meantime while we're reaching out to First Nations communities to continue wanting to work with them?
Exactly. Exactly. And what was the gap that you saw between rescues and the communities like First Nations that made you even birth FLIP?
It's always just the desire just to jump right to intake, like jump right into rehoming, jump right into surrendering. And it's not always about that. Sometimes those dogs belong there. Sometimes those dogs are happier there. I will always remember we took a dog named Otis in, and we took him in because he was kind of just being beat up where he was living out on the nation. And his owner was elderly, and she kind of was just out of options and kind of, you know, tired of dealing with it. And we took him, and he went to a foster home that he promptly escaped from and went on the run all over the city. And then he moved to Metropolitan Vancouver, which, you know, for a res dog, I can imagine was just terrifying. And, you know, like he kind of lived out his years, not as happily as he probably would have had we left him where he was. So,
right.
You know, it's not always the best thing just to, you know, like, hey, let's take them in. Let's throw them in a shelter. Let's throw them in a rescue. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's maybe leave them where they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's maybe just leave them where they are and see if we can make them happy there.
Yeah, that's a different take on it. That's necessary. Now, with the implants and injectables, I mean, they're non-invasive, so how does that change what's possible in terms of reach compared to like the traditional spay neuters?
In terms of reach, we don't have to rely on having a clinic close. It's very portable. We can do the whole thing out of a community hall or a church, you know, church basement, that sort of thing. As long as there's somewhere where it's indoors and there's running water, we can basically run our program. We need one vet to oversee our program and ideally a vet tech to help us. And we can run the implants and the injectables year round because it's non-invasive. It's not surgical. Large scale spay neuter clinics do tend to be restricted to spring through fall. You know, you're not doing surgeries on pets. Huh. Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to do surgeries on pets and then kind of send them outside to heal from a spay. Yeah. Yeah, so it's extremely non-invasive. There's no healing time. The implants themselves, it's not permanent. The injectables are permanent in the males, but the implants are not permanent. So it does kind of, believe it or not, that's a little bit of a selling feature because, you know, a spay is very permanent. So sometimes it maybe is like, hey, why don't you give your mama a couple years of having litters, give her a break. And, just let her get healthy and let her fatten up. And you know, then quite often it's a little bit easier to talk somebody into a spay because their dog has really had a big change of personality when she's not being a mama all the time.
Very true. And I love that option doesn't scare people into commitment.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's, and beyond the birth control, your program also vaccinates, right? You guys deworm, you microchip in the same visit.
Yep. Yeah. Quite often, We haven't actually implemented the implant program yet. So we have started the relationship building phases. Working with nations usually starts with pet food and supplies, and then we'll branch into the microchipping, deworming, and vaccinating. And all of that stuff we do at very low cost. We ask for donations, but I buy our microchips off Amazon for $5 a piece. I get our vaccines from a local pharmacy and they're about $20 a dog. Deworming, again, I buy a big bottle. We split it up and send them home with the instructions and away you go. And really, it's such a big impact, even just in the health of the community. If you're not having diseased dogs and, you know, parasites and worms and that sort of thing, and you're not having hungry dogs, it really does. Exactly. That's where the difference starts to show, when the dogs are not hungry.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, because you're doing this at low cost compared to vets. Do you have a lot? You get a lot of support from vets?
No, actually, vets are kind of a little bit scared of what we want to do. And I'm not really sure why, because it's new, it's innovative.
Right.
It's not being done. There is a program in Manitoba that's been successfully running the implants for several years. There was a vet in southern Alberta that was running the program here for several years, again, very successfully, no complaints at all. So there's nothing wrong with the program. I think it's just because it's new and it's different and it's not traditional. Yeah. So
right.
But when we're looking at, you know, branching out to these underserved demographics, right? It makes a little bit more sense.
Yes, I agree. I agree. They do need more access.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we're just going to go to have a quick break. And when we get back, we will continue our conversation with Angie.
Talk to the Paw.
Hi, this is Amy Stewart.
Hi, I'm Jane Lynch.
This is Mandy Moore.
Hi there, I'm Kate Walsh.
This is Catherine Tygo.
There's only one station that gives you the scoop on wagging tongues and tails and who's walking who in Rent and Tinseltown. Pet Life Radio, the Tail Wagger.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Save a Pooch. We are talking with Angie of Mudstock. All right, so shifting gears here, what misconceptions do rescues or outside organizations sometimes bring into these communities? And how does FLIP work to correct that?
The biggest misconception is the way they're treating their pets means that they don't care about them or that they don't love them. My dog sleeps in my bed. In a First Nation community, that's almost unheard of, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Just because their pets are treated differently, it doesn't mean they're treated badly. And it's really easy for outsiders and for some rescue organizations just to jump to, well, you don't deserve to have your pets if you can't do this and if you can't do that. And like I said, a lot of it does come down to tools, resources, education. And really, that's a big part of our program, and that's the part of our program that makes it sustainable.
Right, exactly.
Is providing those tools, providing those resources, and providing the education.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah, to foster, you know, responsible pet ownership, pet guardianship.
Exactly. Yeah. Education is a key piece, because coming from my background and, you know, my culture, it is not common to have a domesticated dog. in the house.
yeah, not at all. Even when we start deworming, people are surprised, like, what do you mean my dog has worms? Well, I can guarantee there's a 99% chance your dog has worms. And if your kids are out playing in your yard and they're running around barefoot and your dogs are pooping in your yard, you know, this is how things happen, right? But it's a very, very simple educational piece. Like, we're going to deworm your dogs and, you know, you should do this, you know, 3-4 times a year, maybe do it seasonally, but you're keeping your dog healthy. You're also keeping your kids healthy. You're keeping your environment healthy, right? So we're looking at an entire community worth of change.
Right. Exactly. I really respect that and admire that about your work. So that's, your role is very, grand scale.
Thank you.
So thank you for affecting all of that. Now, you've talked about culling practices causing long-term harm in communities. How does this program offer a different path?
I do understand that a lot of nations, a lot of communities would like to start with a clean slate, and they feel that a cull is going to be the way to accomplish that. And really, the first thing that the reason it's not going to accomplish that is because if you take away 3 dogs from somebody, they're just going to go out and get 6 more, right? So it's not about removing the dogs. It's about, again, the tools, the resources, and the education. Many First Nations communities have free roaming dogs, and that's not the issue. The issue
right.
is the, you know, the free roaming hormones. The issue is the hunger. The issue is the fighting, all of those sorts of things. And those are all solvable problems. You know, we can remove the hormones. We can remove the hunger. We can, you know, I personally do not like to see free roaming dogs tethered because I think it causes another hazard for them. But, you know, pallets. Every day on Marketplace, people are giving away pallets by the thousands. You know, you can make a very, very good fence with pallets and posts for very, very low cost, right? So again, it's let's think outside of the box. Let's find options. Let's find solutions that work for that nation. You don't want to tie your dogs up? I understand, but you don't want your dogs free roaming? Okay, well, let's make pallet fences. Let's get together. Let's have a doghouse building day. Let's, you know, let's put these resources that we have available where you need them.
Right, right. And should have asked earlier, but for just to clarify, what is your definition of culling?
So that would be a community will pay somebody or several somebodies X amount of dollars per dog that they are able to shoot and dispatch of. It gotcha. Happens okay. usually over a weekend or several days. Understandably, it's extremely traumatic for anybody involved.
Right.
It would be extremely traumatic for anybody in the community because you're just nothing but hearing shots ring out for days and knowing, you know, and you don't know because you're just indiscriminately going around and just shooting any dog you see.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I did hear a story, awful, awful story about a young boy who was missing his dog and he had found the pit where they had been placed and found his dog, you know, and I can't imagine as a young boy, you know, having to go through that.
See that? Yeah.
I can't imagine.
They don't even make sure like this is the dog from somebody else.
Yeah. And honestly, aside from the feeding program that we start first off, the second thing we do is collars because that is the easiest visual identification.
Like regular collars?
Regular collars.
Okay.
I have totes and totes and totes of them in my garage and we'll take collars out. And, you know, that is the quickest, easiest way to tell if a dog has a guardian or if it's a stray dog. And there's a big difference between stray and free roaming in these communities. And that, again, is very easily confused by
right.
outsiders or rescues that aren't necessarily familiar with the difference between stray and free roaming. So slap a collar on it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's that simple. Slap a collar on it.
Bingo.
Yeah, easy.
Can you share a story that captures what this work has actually changed, like for an animal, a family, a community?
Yeah, so we were working with a nation up a little bit further up north in Alberta, and we had been out there for a couple years, and we were just kind of getting at that part of our relationship with that nation where we were starting the microchipping, the vaccines, and the deworming. So I think it was our second or third community day is what we call them. And we were doing microchipping. And when we're going out to a community, we like to, you know, post on Facebook and get some, you know, some interests garnered. And we like to know what we need to bring and stuff like that. We like to, you know, ideally have people sign up. So this wonderful woman had signed up and she brought her Mastiff. And he was kind of like a juvenile. I'd say he was under 3 years old. Stunning, stunning dog. Stunning. Just gorgeous. He was big. He was goofy. He was funny. Just everything that a Mastiff is. And she was telling us a story about a rescue in the area had helped themselves to her dog, this dog, three times. And every time that this dog was missing, she knew exactly where he was. And she would go there and say, give me my damn dog back. And she would go and haul him back home. So when we're explaining the process of microchipping and what it does. And again, I will remind you that it costs us $5 off Amazon to get our microchips. When we told her what we were going to do, we're going to put this microchip in. She's going to provide us her information. We're going to register this microchip. That microchip does get registered internationally to her, to her name, to her phone number, to her address, and to her email address. And the next time that rescue comes and steals this dog, you can now charge them with theft under $5,000. Because in Alberta and in Canada, dogs are considered property, and this rescue has helped themselves to your property. That microchip is proof of ownership. So we empowered that woman to stop her dog from being stolen, and she was aghast. She had no idea that for something as simple as that microchip that we were putting into her dog empowered her from having her dog stolen and gave her the ability to have them charged with stealing her dog over and over and over again. And again, it's simple education, right? Simple education and a $5 microchip. And rescues in the area were like, I can't believe you guys are out there chipping res dogs. Well, of course we are. Of course we are. So, yeah.
Perfect example. Yeah. Why were they always trying to steal her dog?
He was just gorgeous. You know, just... The problem is with some rescues is they'll just drive down a road and they'll just see a dog and they'll just like, yeah, I'm going to pick this up. This dog's really adoptable. This dog is, you know, this dog is really desirable. This dog is, you know, and sometimes they just, you know, they think that they can do better by the dog. So they'll just drive by and pick him up.
Oh, but okay.
This dog in particular, they had taken more than once. So they knew full well what they were doing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That sheds light also too on the dark side of rescue organizations.
Yeah, it's a problem. It is a problem because, yes, in Canada, dogs are considered property. And if you steal somebody's dog, you're stealing their property and you can be charged. So, you know, there are a bunch of, I don't know, vigilante rescuers out there, whatever you want to call them, that think that they're doing everybody a favor by just going into these nations and just stealing dogs because they think they can do better by them. And that may be a fantastic short-term solution, but it doesn't solve anything in the long run.
Right, right. And you know, you mentioned it before, they're better off there. They would be happier there.
If you were a dog, where would you rather be?
Free roaming.
Right? I know where I would rather be. You know, I have a lake. I have a forest. I have rabbits to chase. Like, I know where I'd want to be. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So looking ahead, what would you like to see change or grow for Mudstock or Flip?
I am really looking forward to seeing where our expanding programs take us. I am really hoping to get back into a First Nation community soon because, like I said, I did find my soul on the res, and you know, I gained so much myself from working with First Nations communities. So that's where I feel like we're doing some really valuable work and we're accepted so graciously in those communities. So, you know, I would like to see our programs expand. I'd like to see our First Nations programs a little bit more widely accepted. You know, I would really like it if people could look at our program and say, hey, you know what? You're onto something. You're right. You know, I do believe that large scale spay neuter is helpful, but if you're not coupling it with all of the other things that need to go along with it,
right?
You're just not going to make any progress. Right. And the thing about exacting change is there has to be progress.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And I like that you are tackling it from a different angle than a lot of the rescue attempts. So it's good to see. It's really good to see.
Thank you.
Yeah. And before we wrap up, what would you say to a community that's skeptical of outside organizations coming in to fix their animal population issues? Well, you said you are generally welcome. Yeah. So that's really good.
Like, I'm not here to steal your dogs because I don't want your dogs. I want you to keep your dogs. And that is a really hard thing because any nation that you go into at this point, like, oh, you're the dog stealers. Oh, you're the dog stealers. And it takes years. It takes years to undo that because that's what they're used to, right? And they're like, no, I don't want your dog. I want you to keep your dog. How can I help you keep your dog? How can I help you keep your pets? You know, like you got another litter of kittens. How do we stop this from happening again? What do we do? And I know myself, I'm currently out of work and I have had a few spells where I've been out of work for a long time. And a difference between one extra bill can be the difference between me feeding my dog, right?
Right. Yes.
So, yes, you know, a dog food program is the first thing we start with anything that we're working with. And that all comes to us by donation. We're not spending money on pet food. So if that's the difference between you keeping your pet or not, is that you've been out of work for a while and you can't feed them for this month, I'm happy to help. Like, that is such an easy solution. Please don't think that you have to give up on your pets because you can't feed them, you know, exactly. Or you can't vet them, or you can't. There's solutions. The solutions are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No one should ever have to make that choice, ideally, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, for people in the city that wants to, and we're in Edmonton, the people in the city that wants to link up with some, I was going to say reputable, but I will say authentic and or rescue organizations, I'm assuming you would be someone they can connect to?
100%. Yeah, 100%.
Okay, awesome.
Muttstock does make a point of working only with, like you said, reputable and ethical rescues that do share our philosophies and our mandates. And we do have quite a few that we do partner with. And, you know, of course, Muttstock, there will be a number of animal rescues at the festival. If anybody is, you know, looking to add to their family or looking to volunteer or donate or help or foster, because there's never enough fosters. I have a puppy in my home right now who's currently up for adoption. So, you know, there's always ways to help and there's always ways to give back.
Amazing. Thank you so much. We are out of time. Angie, so thank you. Thank you for showing us that Animal Welfare and Community Trust, they have the same goals. And thanks to our show producer, Mark Winter, for making the show possible. You can learn more about Angie and Muttstock by visiting muttstock.com. We'll also have the link posted on our show page. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a show, also please email me at beverly@petliferadio.com. So until next time, spread animal compassion.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.